Blog Talk Radio.
From Danny's Bar and Grill in Palm Harbor. We'll get Bobby there next week. Jerry's on vacation. I was just down there today. Wished him well. And he had a great golf event this past weekend. Terry, one of the managers there, is having a little bit of health problems right now. So the City of Golf went well. So we'll talk to hopefully those guys next week. And that's all brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Ember, Pennsylvania. Where you want to purchase a water heater, log on to BradfordWhite.com. Tampa Bay Lightnings have a home game this coming Thursday night, 7:30 face-off first to Florida Panthers, 813-301-6111. 6800, like, and also Tampa Bay Golf. Give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Course, St. Louis University, have not been up there in a while. Been busy handling accounts down at the forums back and forth. Give them Tom a call, 352-588-2060. I'd like to thank the East Lake Woods Golf Course, Frank and Roger. They had us out there yesterday. And yours truly beat out Mr. Rick Peckham yesterday, so we had a great time out there. I played some client golf out there with the Shepherd's Bar and Grill. Tommy, I'd like to say hello to Tommy out there, Shepherd's Bar and Grill, great place to go when you're visiting the Tampa Bay market. I can't forget the Holiday Inn Express in Brandon. I can't forget the Holiday Inn in Clearwater, St. Pete Airport, a couple of our supporters of this radio program. I'd like to welcome Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Hedler. Frank Carroll does a great job. Our Florida legend, Mr. Frank Carroll. Gentlemen, good evening.
Yeah, we got Don on here, too. Philadelphia legend, Don.
Gentlemen, I'm going to say one thing. Reading the papers all day down here, and Don, you read them too. Doug Fernandez's column. Thank you, Joe Madden. Thank you, Matt Joyce. Thank you, Ben Zobers. Thank you, Evan Longoria, for one hell of a season. 90 wins. You're in the playoffs. The Toronto Blue Jays will not have money. Anaheim will not have money. And also the Philadelphia Phillies did not make the playoffs. But, Joe, you did. Congratulations. Thank you for a hell of a baseball season.
Well, as Joe said in the post game, I don't know if you had a chance to see it or hear it after the game last night. And, you know, he complimented, obviously, the Red Sox. But as he indicated, 92 games during the season, not many teams win 92 games. And they were very, very successful during the year. The Red Sox, quite honestly, I thought were a better baseball team, and they proved it again last night. They just had a little too much offense. Joe did everything he could possibly do. His alignment of nine pitchers, I don't think I've ever seen that before in my life.
No, and, never baseball.
But he did everything he could possibly do, but unfortunately the offense didn't click.
Yes, you got to give the Red Sox credit for doing that. You know, the Red Sox had a heck of a season this year. John Farrell should be manager of the year right now, guys. And the Red Sox were the better team last night. When you think about it, they were the better team.
Right.
And I got to give them credit for.
I can tell you that, Tommy, up here, and I saw today, and I'm sure Don, you guys are aware of it. Joe Girardi signed a four-year contract to stay with the Yankees.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Roger, I always thought he was going to stay there. I thought his family was very, very happy to be in the New York area. As much as he says Chicago, and he went to Northwestern, he loves Chicago, but there's nothing like New York. And all the advantages that go with being a manager of the New York Yankees, I just did not see that he would go anywhere else.
Yeah, I heard the same thing you did, and that the family is very happy in Westchester County. But I also agree with everything about Joe Madden. Did an outstanding job, and what more can you say? Year in and year out, with not the payroll around, he puts a quality product and wins games.
Well, I think the biggest thing now, Tommy and Frank are in a much better position, I think, either than you or I, Roger, because they've got a lot of decisions to make now. Price being number one, the Cy Young Award winner last year, who, you know, didn't have the year he had this year. He was injured a little bit and struggled a little bit. And, of course, he's not going to be happy about the last performance he put in against the Red Sox. But they've got some decisions to make about free agents. Can they afford to sign these players? And they're right up against the wall, as they always are.
Well, you know, Don, the Braves are in a similar situation because I think and pretty much everybody agrees, the Nationals underperform and the Braves overperform this year.
Right.
And Brian McCann is a free agent, but I don't know whether you have heard the story about Chipper Jones throwing out the first ball at one of the games. I think it was the second game, first or second, and Bobby Cox did the other one.
Yeah, I thought it was the first game.
Chipper had gone on the radio, one of the sports stations, last week, and when he was asked about who he thought would win, he said he felt the Dodgers were the best team in baseball, and he picked them to beat the Braves in four. Well, of course, that gets back to the his old teammates, and they refused to catch the opening ball from him, and that's why the mascot was the one that had to make the catch.
Oh, my God.
Well,
so
I'll tell you, when you look at the Dodgers, it's not too difficult when you have a Greinke and a Kershaw to, and it's only a five-game series, and then you got backups coming out of the bullpen. I really thought that the Dodgers, again, I would have to agree with Chipper. I would think the Dodgers would be the favorites going in, even in the next series.
Oh, I would too, but I would pick them to win the World Series. I think they are the best team in baseball, and I think you have to give Don Mattingly a lot of credit. They were ready to fire him, what, in June, and the way he turned that team around.
Well, getting back to the Rays for a second, it's not only Price they have to worry about. Loney, who had a terrific year, and how about the play he made with the bases loaded, realizing he could make the double play at first base and a perfect throw to second to get them out of that first inning, or second inning, I should say, with the bases loaded and nobody out. Just a great, great play. Strong defensive player, a great acquisition from last year with the Dodgers. And you wonder whether he's going to be able to come back or whether they'll pay him enough money to come back.
That's true. Well, you have to congratulate Larry Bowa, guys. Going to be the bench coach for Ryne Sandberg on the Phillies.
Well, we talked about that
last week.
That was in the papers last week that they thought that was the direction he was going to go. I'm a little surprised to be. Well, he's a baseball guru, and so I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But I thought he had such a great job on MLS. I thought he would stay there, but I guess the Phillies offered him enough money that he decided to make that move.
Well, he was the one that wanted to. He was the one that approached Rhino about it, from what I read today, because they were kicking around about it, and he said, do you think I'd ever get back coaching? And Rhino said, yeah, I'd like to have you as my best coach. And this goes back like a year or so, when he was up at Lehigh Valley.
Right.
When they finalized it, and of course Pete Mackinnon is going to be the third base coach, so he was only away for a year, and he was scouting for the Yankees, so they still have to decide on a fifth coach. And I also heard that the assistant hitting coach Wally Joyner, he decided not to come back. Steve Henderson has been rehired, but Wally Joyner is going to move on.
Wow, that's crazy. Wally Joyner's a good hitting coach, Roger, when you think about it.
He was. I agree with you, Tommy. And, they got rid of Greg Gross, and I didn't think that this year's hitting was as good as last year, and they got rid of him because they weren't happy about it.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I don't have a great deal of faith in hitting instructors. I think, the routine, throwing batting practice, going down to the cage, trying to work on some basic things are fine. But hitters hit, and the hitters that can't hit don't hit. And there are very, very few players that a hitting coach is going to make into a big-time hitter.
Oh, exactly. The only thing, Don and Roger and Frank, the only example I see is going to be like what Charlie Manuel did to Jim Thome. That's your prime example, prime example. Charlie made Jimmy a 500 home run hitter, a good baseball hitter. Now, Derek Shell was in Cleveland. Now he's getting the rap for these guys not hitting the baseball at all. And, I can't see Derek Shelton getting the rap too much from these players. Ohtani's all close to 300 hitter during the season, and Evan Longoria hit the ball well. It's a team effort. And as you saw last night, 1-0 lead, and Hellickson was not pitching that well, bases loaded. But you use those pitches, like Don was saying earlier in the program, that use those pitches is fantastic to get them out of there. And it was a great move by Joe, but unfortunately, Boston, Shane Victorino, who killed the Rays in 2008, did it to a game last night. Don and Roger and Frank, you saw that play. He beat out that play, which scored the tying run. That was a game changing momentum for that game last night.
Well, Tommy, they put so much stock in it. I remember when Leo Mazzoni was the greatest pitching coach in the history of baseball,
yes.
all he did was win. Stottlemyre was one of the great pitching coaches of all time with the New York Yankees when he was there. If you got the players, you're a great pitching coach. If you're a hitting,
right, exactly.
If you're a hitting instructor, you know, you're a great hitting instructor. Yeah,
exactly.
If you got the players, you are.
Right.
Well, Leo,
you know,
Mazzoni, Don, is one of the co-hosts on the morning show on 680 The Fan in Atlanta.
Oh. I understand he is. Yeah. Well, how do you make out in Baltimore?
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, when we get to pro football, I want to throw this out on the table so you guys are ready, because this involves Tommy, you, and Frank, because you guys were there when this all happened, and this was a conversation today in the locker room at the Falcons between John Peterson, you know, JP, and Reggie Roberts. When we get into the pro football, I need your gentlemen to give your opinion about everything that was discussed today. There's a lot
well,
of
we're
controversy.
About to do that, Roger, because we have I guess, Ben, what is your title? Director of Communications for the Arena Football League in Tampa. The
yes,
Tampa
he is.
Yes, for the Tampa Bay Storm.
That's right.
Ben, welcome to our program, so we got you on.
Good to always talk to Ben. Love the Arena League.
Yes.
I love the Arena League.
But I want to know, are you doing double duty with, because I got a call from Joe Girardi that you were going to make an announcement for him today.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm pleased to announce that the Yankees have re-signed Joe Girardi for another 4 years.
One thing
there
about
you,
you're always about 2 hours late.
I know, but Ben, great to have you on. Ben, anything going on with this Tampa Bay Storm right now? I know we had a tryout camp.
Nothing. We have a couple of tryouts. We have one over up in Georgia in Marietta. An open tryout. You know, anybody that, as long as you're over the age of 19, come out to the school. I have a release out. It's going to be at Kell High School in Marietta.
Okay.
And as long as you
when,
can.
When is that going to be, Ben? When
November,
is that
going to
be?
Oh, you're testing my. November 6th. That's the first Saturday. The first Saturday in November, I believe, is the 6th.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's November 9th. I apologize.
November
9th.
Okay, Tommy will give you my email and everything.
Yes,
send that to me, and I will get that out to all the sports stations in Atlanta.
Oh, great. I appreciate it.
Ben,
yeah,
I'll bring his card down tomorrow.
Ben, I'll bring his card down tomorrow.
Definitely.
Okay.
That'd be great. I really appreciate that.
Well, we talked at great length the last time you were on with us about the expansion and also the commissioner when he was on and, you know, the job that the KISS has done with the numbers of not only dollars, but publicity that they brought to the league. And he talked at that time about the possibility of a couple of franchises. Has anything happened in that direction yet?
Yes, they expanded. They brought in a franchise in Portland. They're going to play at the Mata Center or the Rose Garden at one point. They got a strong backing by the Blazers. They're owned by a private owner named Mr. Emmert. He's a local businessman up there, and we're looking to bring football back to Portland. There used to be actually a Portland team in the late 90s up there, and they've been hungry for more football. So it should be really good. It should be a really good thing to have another city in the league.
Great.
Oh, that's fantastic, Ben. I mean, that's going to be great for Portland. That's beautiful. I've never been up there, Ben, but you'll probably enjoy it up there for the if we play it on the road this year out there, you know.
Yeah, I know. I have two new cities I've never been to. I hope we get away games there.
We probably will. Get the puzzles on the airline, right?
Tommy, we've always talked about fiddles and playing around, but why play with a second fiddle when we can get to the big guy? We have the Tampa Bay Storm's newest member of the Hall of Fame and the newest coach on the block. He's with us tonight too.
I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, Mr. Lawrence Samuels. Lawrence, good evening. We got you on finally. So, how you doing today, Lawrence?
I'm doing great. How you doing today?
Well, Lawrence, we talked about some of the new teams and some of the old teams before you got on the air with us, and you're going to be doing a little bit more traveling and a little more pressure to win more games.
We're very fortunate to have two new teams come in this year, and actually, it shows that we're going in the right direction in the Arena Football League.
The question I have, Ben just mentioned about you're going to have the open tryout at Kell in Marietta in early November. Lawrence, will you be there?
Sure. Yes.
You will be. Okay, good. I'll get over there. And we'll get some publicity out to the writers and the sports directors on all the outlets in Atlanta.
Oh, that'd be great.
They get to meet Roger in person. That's even better, Lawrence.
I can tell you, I won't be crying out, guys.
All right.
Well, Lawrence, is your situation now where you sort of wait till everybody decides they're going to go to camp and sort of have to wait till some players are cut, or can you go out and recruit players now that were maybe not looking for going to camp with an NFL team?
Well, we try to open it up for everybody to have an opportunity to, just to be a part of the Tampa Bay Storm organization, and we're very fortunate that our owners and our administrative staff, Brooks and all of us, we're very fortunate to be able to go out of our state to Atlanta. Atlanta is like a central hub of talent. You can get there from, you have Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, the Carolinas is right there, and everybody can get to that spot that, wants the opportunity to try out for the Storm. So it's a great area. It was great for us last year. We actually signed two players, R.J. Roberts, that played for us last year out of the Atlanta camp, and it's been very good for us. So we plan on going back and attending, having a camp up there again this year.
Oh, that's fantastic. It should be great weather for football out there for this tryout camp. Go up in the lane in November up there and that. I mean, it's looking forward to, like I said, I know it's October. I always saw Ben in the office. I cannot wait for storm season and your first debut as head coach. And I still say we'll be playing football in August for August, and we'll win that championship this year.
That's right. Championships are not built in the training camp. They're built right now. And actually, me and Ben, Ben comes to the office all the time. He looks at the board and he looks at it and he's like, we're shaping up pretty good. So, we're working hard every day. Ben, myself, Brooks, Gooch, Wilson, Hovan, Coach K, all of us, we're doing our part to try to get the, evaluating players each and every day. They send us films, we get phone calls, we're making phone calls. We're going over and above, and then with the camps coming up, we're really looking forward to having two or three. I think we're gonna have four scheduled, but I know the two we have in November, the one in Atlanta and the one here in Tampa, everybody's looking forward to those. We're trying to fill our roster with qualified guys that can compete for position, and we're trying to compete, create competition in every position on the Storm.
Well, your buddy over at the University of South Florida got off the schneid. Maybe you can give him a few pointers over there to keep that team winning.
Well, and I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them. It's tough right now, but I think for the most part that once we get settled in and things, he'll be able to turn it around. You know, that Bell High School, Lawrence, is one of the top high school football teams in the state of Georgia. And they've got a rich tradition. And I do believe Jonathan Dwyer from Georgia Tech and the Steelers, I think he was cut, but I think they also re-signed him, as I recall. I think he's from Bell. He's right from Bell High School.
Right.
So it's a great facility, great venue for you to have that tryout there.
Oh yeah, and it's outdoor. I think Coach Wilson was like, you know, because Coach Wilson has ties in Georgia, and he was telling us that it's an outdoor turf surface. So you know, we'll be able to evaluate guys full go that day. It'd be a fun field day, just being able to evaluate talent, watch guys go through the drills, and then we'll just evaluate them and their football skills and that nature. We get a lot of guys from college that come out to those camps, and guys just looking for an opportunity to start off their professional career.
And, Lawrence, how about the camp in Tampa? How do they register? You know, through Storm, for the Tampa Bay Storm.com website, or how would they register to try to participate in that great camp?
All they have to do is go to the Tampa Bay Storm website. Ben has done a great job setting that up. They go on there and they register for the camp. And I think if they go on there and they register early, it's actually, I think the fee is lower. So.
Yeah, they actually, there's a, if they go on TampaBayStorm.com and they click tryout information, there's a whole fill-in form that there's two links. One will link to the Georgia and one links to the Tampa camp. And, you know, whichever one they sign up to, they can pre-register up until, I believe, the day before the camp, and they get a discount on the registration fee.
Wow, that's such a great thing. I know Ben does a great job for during the season and off season. He's working harder than the off season right now. Every time I go by him, he's always working, Lawrence.
Always working. That's why I like Ben. Ben is always working. And he's a hard worker. And that's why I love him.
But every time I go by his camp, we talk Yankee baseball, and a couple of times I always go by him and I always go, woo! for those who don't know, though, to the Tampa Bay Storm last year, had defensive backs, and that was the highlight when the practice was over, they're going, woo!
Lawrence, you said you're going to have tryouts for all the positions. Is there any position that's locked down? Are the quarterbacks locked down or any of the running backs at this point?
Well, at this point, everything is kind of wide open. You know, we still have our building block. Our main guys are still intact with the Tampa Bay Storm. But, you know, we're always looking for areas to get better. And you know, the only way that you can get better is to create competition in each and every position.
Right.
So if we find a guy out there in the tryout that is actually what we're looking for, you better believe that I'll be the first one over there with clipboards rounding them up.
That's for sure, Lawrence. I mean, you do such a great job as your playing days. Now these guys can respect you. A, you're in the Hall of Fame. You had a great career at the Tampa Bay Storm. And most important thing, Lawrence, you have rings of proof, so these guys can really look up to you, and you'd be such a great teacher of young men who want to further their careers in pro football.
Well, let's not forget, you know, he's a great teacher in the school system, too, so he has the ability to get things across to people.
Yes, all around great teacher, Lawrence. That's fantastic. I mean, what these young football players can look up to you is that I've been there, it was up and down in my career, and look what I've hard worked, proves it. Look what I've done. I got championships, I'm in the Hall of Fame, and now I'm the head coach of a great organization.
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate and very blessed to play with some great players along the way also. And I've learned from some great coaches along the way. And, you know, it's something, you know, it's almost easier to be able to teach it because of the fact that you've experienced it, and I think experience is probably the greatest teacher, and I can pass that along to other young players.
Well, that's fantastic. We're so honored, Lawrence, to know he's a good friend of mine, to be the head coach and have you come on our program every week. We feel very blessed up there. But the only thing Ben tells you when I'm watching this football games is those damn officials. So I'm down there still kicking my trash can down there. I think it's been one trash can already down in the 6 or 3:19, Lawrence. I was so frustrated. I drop pencils and I go down, take my walk and be frustrated. And Frank can vouch for that too.
Yep. Lawrence, you have just become a member of the club. One game in any sport that Tommy has agreed with any of the officials. So now that he's gotten to you and arena football, that makes a clear circle.
Well, Ben can vouch for that too, Lawrence, right, Ben? I get frustrated, you know.
Sometimes you just get so frustrated.
Yeah, but you know, I have to work on as a head coach. I have to be able to keep my cool with the officials.
The one thing you have to remember is you can't play without them.
That's right.
Right. That's right.
All right. The one response I always give is, well, you know, they have a job to do, and you just hope that they got the call correct.
That's right.
But some of those calls, I have to kick the trash can down there or just shake my head and like saying dropping pencils up there. And Lawrence Ben always looks down at me and says, I'm okay.
Tommy, just look at the playoffs that we've had in baseball. They've got 8 cameras all over the place showing every play.
Right.
And how many calls do they miss? They miss calls. You can't do anything about that. It's part of the game.
Know.
I mean, that they called a home run yesterday. They're still arguing about whether that was a home run or not. They had their slow motion and stop motion. They had everything on it.
I know.
Right.
I really appreciate your enthusiasm for the team. But as you know, the Tampa Bay Forum is owned by the city of Tampa. If you're destroying city property, it's my duty as a law enforcement officer to inform you. Here we go. And take it to a pier tomorrow.
There goes the state. There goes the state
private property.
The police are on their way.
Ben, I'd be in jail tonight, right?
You've been in jail a long time ago.
Well, Ben, my notes are in my drawer. Could you get Frank's credential for that?
I just earned my credential.
Take it to me now, Ben. I'll see you guys later. Hiccup me now, guys. So, Lawrence, it's been nice knowing you. I got to turn my sense for beating the trash can up.
Lawrence, it's always a pleasure to have on the show anytime.
Oh, God bless you, Lawrence.
And I look forward to seeing you beginning in November, Lawrence.
Yes.
Okay, November 9th. November 9th, Roger.
November 9th at Kell High School.
You and I have it written down. Ben, he'll find out about it tomorrow or the next day.
Yes. I'll bring that card in tomorrow for Roger's information for you. Bring it in tomorrow.
Yeah, just give me that. Just give me that email address, and I'll be sure to send it out to you.
Yes,
sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Lawrence, for coming on. Lawrence, when you get some free time, me and Don and Frank like to get you on the golf course when you get some free time.
We just talked about that off air. We're going to make sure that you get it. We're getting down to Laurel Oaks within the next couple of weeks here.
Yes.
So you're going to get a date.
Ben, you come through. Ben, you want to come through? More than welcome.
Sure.
Let me know the date and we'll figure it out.
Yep.
Definitely.
Good. Excellent.
Great. Oh, my God. I got to get the Lawrence. I got to dust the clubs off now. I don't know. Lawrence, thank you for your time, sir. Ben, always a pleasure, sir. Ben, I'll see you tomorrow morning.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow, Tommy.
Okay.
Thank you,
all
right, guys. I appreciate your time.
Good to have you with us, Ben.
Oh,
all right, guys.
Ben.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Okay,
appreciate
Tommy,
your time.
Since we're on pro football,
right,
I'll go in real quick about this because you guys were there. I understand that Trent Dilfer, after Monday night's game, absolutely buried Matt Ryan. And the conversation today between JP and Reggie, and then I talked to JP, was talking about Trent Dilfer is not the best quarterback in the history of the Tampa Bay Bucks.
No.
And the last guy in the world to criticize any other quarterback should be Trent Dilfer. He won the Super Bowl, but that's because the Ravens had a great defense.
Exactly.
And
yes.
And he was able to control the game. That was it. You know, he didn't set the world on fire. So I know you and Frank were there. As Reggie said, we were there. We saw how bad Dilfer was.
Right. Well, I remember JP always would go up to shake his head every time Trent would go back to pass. He had these great starts for Lawrence Stassi and that. But then Trent tried to force things. He threw a lot of INTs. The only reason why Trent Dilfer won the Super Bowl was Baltimore / Cleveland had a great defense. All he did is hand off the ball, be conservative offense, like a vanilla offense. That's why he was successful. But you take it for Trent Dilfer being a star quarterback in the NFL, no way. He was lucky to win that one ring because Baltimore had one heck of a defense, guys.
That's exactly right. You know, a lot of things, unfortunately, negative have happened to the Falcons from the personnel perspective. Julio Jones is probably gone for the season.
They haven't announced
it as yet. But he has an injury to his foot. And one of the rumors is he went for a second opinion today in Charlotte to a doctor who is like the Dr. James Andrews, who handles what the arms and the elbows and everything. Well, the doctor in Charlotte is like the equivalent as far as Vito. And one of the rumors is that the screw in his foot from an operation in 2011 broke. Obviously that's going to take some serious surgery to get him back. And then, of course, they had lost several players before that. Roddy White is back out off the field with a hamstring. And fortunately, the Falcons have a bye week. And, of course, then they host the Bucks next week from Sunday.
Well, that's right.
But the other rumor that's been floating around, and of course you have to look at it from the Falcons' perspective. Do they feel now at 1-4, at the very best, they can probably hope for a wild card because they're four games behind the Saints. And I think that now with having to utilize backup players, especially as wideouts, I mean, everybody's going to have to step up. They'll win some games, but I think they'll also lose a number of games. And the question is, what about Tony Gonzalez? Tony came back anticipating that he would have a shot to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Well, there's some speculation now that he will be traded to a team that has a real shot at the Super Bowl, i.e. the Chiefs at 5-0. Okay? And the Patriots could use another great tight end. And we were talking about this today in the media room, that there's still two more games before the trading deadline. So I think what the team will do is probably talk to Tony, see what he wants. He's not the kind that's going to walk away, you know, now in the middle of the season. You know, but you also want to do something good for Tony because the only reason he came back was because he thought he had a shot to win the whole thing.
Right, so exactly.
I could see him going back to Kansas City because I think that, you know, that's probably where the team he's going to retire from into the Hall of Fame. And also, I think they have a real good shot. And I went on the record the other day. I said the best thing that Andy Reid did when he went to Kansas City was not take all of his old coaching staff with him. He took a couple, but not. And then you look at the job Marty Morningway did the other night on the Falcons with the offensive with Geno Smith. I mean, Marty did a fantastic job of orchestrating that offense.
But don't forget, he did a pretty nice job of quarterbacking that team, too, Roger. You're talking about a rookie who had all kinds of trouble the week before and comes in and has basically a clean slate game.
Yeah, you're right, Don. And the other thing, you have to look at Marty. He's done a pretty good job over his career. developing young quarterbacks.
Right. Yes. He protects them.
He protects them. That's right. And
the,
other thing,
Roger, that you touched on, and I agree 100%. They've got a bye week this week, which is really, really necessary. With all the players they have banged up and the personnel that they're going to have to adjust to different positions necessarily. But the other thing is, Roger, I keep bringing this up time and time again. Once again, he doesn't kick the field goal. If he kicks the field goal, he's still playing.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah, but you know the other thing that look at the punter Matt Bosher made two tackles. The punter shouldn't be making tackles.
No,
you know. And the other thing is he had the first punt blocked, which changed the whole complexion of that game from the outset because they didn't block the guys coming in on him. You know, he's one of the top punters in the league. And
the other thing, you're talking about the Jets going down the field in, what, a minute 45 seconds to win the game.
I know, because of the lousy defense.
Right.
You know, they didn't bring John Abraham back. They brought OC in, and, you know, you got to have one on either side. But I'll tell you, the other thing that gets me about this whole thing is that, if you noticed, you know, Rex is back calling the plays again, the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Matt Ryan this today. Brian Van Gorder was the defensive coordinator for Mike Smith for his first 4 years. Then he went to Auburn as defensive coordinator last year. Now he's the linebacker coach for the Jets. He was next to Rex every shot they took, unless Rex was walking. And I asked Matt, I said, do you think, because he knows you and the offense so well, that had an impact? He thought it did. And he said, but that's just the way it is, you know, when you have a coach go from one team to another.
Right.
But he knew that offense because he went against them every day for 4 years.
That's right. Great, great point. I couldn't say it better up there, guys. That's a great point. Roger, how's the fan base? Are they getting on the Falcons right now?
They're up in arms. And then the other thing is, probably got the email that the NFL will be playing three games in London in the next season.
Oh,
and the
sorry.
Falcons will be the host team for one of the games.
Oh, my.
So that means there'll be seven home games in Atlanta. And now they also, you'll love this one. I brought this up to some of the guys yesterday when I heard. But the callers, hey, fellas, we thought Philly was bad, okay? And Don, going back 25 years with calls at the Sports Line and Sports Final, there were crazies. As you know, when Sports Jerry called me, I knew I made the big time.
Sports Jerry, remember that?
I'll tell you, the guy called in, this is a classic. A guy calls in, and now he has blamed all of the Falcon losses on Mayor Kasim Reed. Because he got those two black churches to sign off to build the new stadium, and he's the one that's, he had them sign those releases, the Falcons haven't won a game.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing, too, that you talked about the off week, and then, you know, if Greg Schiano can't get the Buccaneers straightened out, and Sapp, of course, came out with a whole series of things today about, you know, the Buccaneers. But let's go past that for a second. The Bucs have an off week this week, too. And so both teams have 2 weeks to prepare for one another. But I would say Schiano at home, he pretty much has to win.
I agree.
Exactly.
And it's against the Eagles.
Yeah, this week's against the Eagles, and then it's against the Falcons.
Right. And the Eagles are tied for first place with those Cowgirls.
Can you believe that?
The NFC least, right?
Yeah.
I thought Sunday night, that was an AFL game because the scoring was so high.
Yeah, but wasn't that a classic, Frank? Wasn't that a great game to watch?
I thought that was a basketball game.
Yeah.
They scored more points than the NBA team scored at the half, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Well, both quarterbacks that went over 500 yards passing. I know Romo did, and I think Peyton did, too.
Yeah, that was a great game up there. That's better than these 5-3 games, you know, or whatever the heck it was.
I was over at Georgia yesterday for Mark Richt's weekly press conference. And what a first class operation UGA football and athletics is. And I didn't get a chance to talk to him real quick at the end, but I wanted to ask him. I said, "What did you think of Peyton coming out and saying he was arguing with Knowshon because Knowshon Moreno wanted to score on that play?" And Peyton told him, "No, you are not allowed to score. You stay in the field." and that reminded me of the Brian Westbrook.
Yeah, right. Going back to Tommy's point about the officials, how about the Texas game? You talk about missed call. Mac Brown got himself a gift.
Oh, his gift wrapped up in with a nice bow on it, Don.
My God!
Hey, he needed it though, Don. You know, after the game, the Texan crowd really went after him.
Oh, I don't think he's going to make it. I don't think he's going to make it past this year. I really don't. It's not all his fault. He did a good job at North Carolina. He did a good job when he first came into Texas. But like everything else, the cycle turns. And right now it's turned down for him. He hasn't been able to make the right move. He hasn't recruited the right players. And when they've gotten beat by the number that they've gotten beaten by, there's no they don't accept that.
The experts have agreed with you, Don, that he is gone at the end of the year, you know, because they're really up in arms. I mean, you went to Texas. You're an alumnus. You know what it's like.
Oh, murder. I mean, they're on top of it from the minute, the season starts. But I'll tell you, there's been some great football. There's been some great football games this year. And as you said, the basketball game the other night. I'm not big on those kind of games myself. I think they got to bring something back in defensively. They got to let the defensive backs at least.
I agree.
I mean, this is getting ridiculous now.
Thank you.
Well,
for saying
the Georgia Kentucky game. I don't know whether you guys saw it on Saturday. Was a great game. Unfortunately for Georgia, a number of injuries. Three that are young men that are gone for the year that are starters, but. What happens? The freshmen have to step up, which they did, and then the other one was South Carolina's game. I mean, I think they're playing Kentucky this week, and Connor Shaw. You know, I'm friends with his dad. Connor Shaw was injured 1 week, and he came back after he had a problem with his shoulder. And he took that team on his back and just took them right down the field. So you got to give Spurrier a lot of credit for what he's done at South Carolina, turning the program around.
Oh, he's really done.
Really thought that, Roger, because what Spurrier's done, you know, the
he just can't beat Florida, Tommy. He can't beat Florida.
That's right. He can't go up to the swamp up there. But I remember, going back to Roger, what he said about Georgia, that the head coach there, he was at the Outback Bowl and. Oh, my God, he was just such a great guy.
Isn't he a class act? I want to tell you.
Pretty much. And he's a hockey fan, believe it or not.
Well, Tommy, he went to the University of Miami.
He's
from Boca Raton, and I don't know if you know about the family, very religious family, but they have two adopted children, I think two from Russia, and one of them has a disability.
Oh.
And I mean, just when you read and then you talk to him, and he's just such a class act. And when he came up out with his opening statement, he goes in and he tells you everything, I was telling a couple of the guys today at the Falcons that we didn't realize how fortunate we were with Andy, because he would always give you the injuries up front.
Right away. Okay. First thing he says when he comes on this podium is he gives you the injury report.
Yeah. These other coaches, Mike Smith, I'll give it to you Wednesday when I have to. They don't even. He was asked on Monday what foot it was that Julio injured, and he would not acknowledge which foot it was.
Oh no!
And now it comes out today that it looks like it's the foot that has the screw in it. From the surgery in 2011.
Oh, my.
Well, we got to go back, Roger, to what you and Tommy were talking about. What a job. What a job Andy's done out there in Kansas City.
Oh,
I mean, 5-0. 5-0, and he's got those people right back where they were 20 years ago now. I mean, he's got that franchise really cooking. And they're going to be really hard to beat now. I mean, they're building momentum with every week.
Well, they are, and Alex Smith is now doesn't have the pressure that he had, excuse me, and it's his team, and he's living within the system. That's the whole key.
Right. And the other thing we didn't talk about tonight was Mr. Freeman. He's been back in the news now. As I said, Sapp made a lot of comments about what's happening with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and also with Freeman and, you know, how anxious he is. It's going in full force now at Minnesota. Well, you know, he should have been going in full force with anybody. He's getting paid a lot of money. He walked away with a nice piece of change from Tampa Bay.
Sure did.
$6.5 million,
right?
Pardon?
Wasn't that what it was, Tommy? $6.5 million?
Yeah, $6.5 million, yeah.
And now he's got $3 million in Minnesota, so he's got over $9 million.
I think he's going to be helping Minnesota up there because you got the Adrian Peterson, a great running back, and Minnesota needed a quarterback like Josh. Like last year, I still say 4,000 yards he had passing, set all kinds of buck records. Even though the team went 6-10, but the potential was there. And he signed, you know, Mike Williams to a big contract. He got Revis in there, and then what about Revis? Kind of talking back to that Eagle wide receiver now because it's a little board-to-board material, guys, but he's going back
and
he's going to watch
Sean Jackson. He's looking forward to the challenge.
Oh, thank God I wasn't there. I would have gave him such a dirty stare.
Well, the other thing, too, which I really saw that it turned out this way because, you know, we talked a lot about it on the show. Fred Tarkington ripping him and ripping and ripping, say he was not a frontline quarterback. And now today talking about Tilford and his comments about Ryan, you know, it's you know, some of these guys who play the game, all of a sudden, boy, oh, they're super critics.
Exactly. That's a great point. You figure Fran Tarkenton, I said this before when he hammered on Josh in the program, what has Tarkenton done? No Super Bowls. Trent Dilfer is luckiest man on the earth, along with, remember Cliff Stout, he held the clipboard for Bradshaw. He had 4 Super Bowl rings. He didn't participate in one single game, for God's sake. And these guys...
Well, the only thing is, Tommy, you know, as much as I hate to say it, because I don't think Fran Tarkenton could have seen him play that many times. I said it time and time again when this was all going on. But it turned out to be that here's a guy being released by the team with $6 million plus still to come. Makes Fran Tarkenton look pretty good.
Hey, guys... We got some answers. I'll bet you right on the other end of this line here is Mr. Roy Cummings, the guy who can tell us 90% of what's going on in the sports world.
Roy,
good
evening,
tonight?
Sir.
Hey,
I'm good,
Roy.
Roy.
How's everybody
happy to
there?
Have you happy to have you with us. That's for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. It's always a pleasure, Roy. I tell you, but real quick. Tough game for the Rays last night. That was a tough one for me to swallow last night. It was a very tough game and got to go in that Boston locker room, hear all the celebration and that. And I still believe in, I, after the game, Roy, I thank Matt Joyce. I thank Matt Moore. And I thanked Chris Archer for a great year we had this year. Even thank Joe in that. But it's just, you know, once you get 90, once you get into the dance, anything can happen. So it wasn't the Rays here this year in the postseason.
Well, you know, it really kind of came down to hitting last night. They didn't have that, and you know, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's like any baseball season. You know, it's not going to be constant, and they just happened to hit a point at the worst time possible where the bats went silent. Of course, I think a lot of that has to do with the Red Sox. You know, the Rays only hit .207 against them all season long, and that's in what, I think 19 games. So we shouldn't be surprised that they struggled last night, but you know, they just needed somebody to come up with a big hit, and unfortunately that big hit didn't come. So it's unfortunate, but you know what? Here's the thing, guys. 92 wins overall, if you count the playoff game that got them into the playoffs, And that's not a bad season. That's, in fact,
not
a very good season.
That's exactly what Joe emphasized at a post-game show last night. And just what you're saying, he said, if you look at the body of work over the course of the season against the Red Sox, they just didn't hit.
Exactly, yeah. They got a bad matchup there. And, you know, maybe if they, you know, they exercised the demon in getting through Texas in the wild card game, which was big. They beat Cleveland. You know, I think they did some miraculous things. You know, just getting to the point where they got into the ALDS, I think was a remarkable feat when you consider the fact that they had to win in Toronto on the last day of the season to force a playoff. They had to win the playoff game to get to the playoffs, to get the wild card. They win the wild card. You know, you're facing elimination constantly, and that's very difficult to deal with on a consistent basis. And you know what? I thought they came through it pretty well. Even last night when you're out pitching pretty much and you're, you know, I thought Joe managed an incredible game pitching-wise. A lot of people might look at it and say, you know, why did you start Hellickson and question all those moves? But the bottom line is, you know what? They gave up 3 runs on 6 hits to the Red Sox, which, again, that's pretty darn good pitching. You just couldn't get some hits. And you know what? They're not the first team in the playoffs who aren't going to get hits at the end. You know, the Atlanta Braves are facing elimination. The St. Louis Cardinals are facing elimination.
Right.
Everybody except one team is going to be eliminated. So it's unfortunate they got knocked out early. We wish they could have gone longer, but I'll tell you what, as a Rays follower, they gave me one heck of a season. I was real happy for them, and certainly do wish they could have gone further, but you know what? I'm not going to complain over what we got.
Roy, let me ask you this. We talked a little bit earlier in the program about it, and, you know, with the free agents that they're now, you know, they've always had a tendency, and not a tendency, the reality of, you know, letting the high-priced guys like Price and Loney's only got the one-year contract. How do you turn the corner here? Because they got a lot of pressure on them to come back with players again.
Yeah, you know, just talking about it last night with some guys, and this is my thinking, and I think they've gotten to a point now, and there's clearly a certain type of player that Joe Maddon likes and that this organization likes. And Sam Fold is one of those kind of guys. Matt Joyce is one of those kind of guys. But I'm starting to think that you've got some players on this team who still have a lot of upside. I think, in my opinion, you know, I would hold on to a guy like David DeJesus, even if it means getting rid of Sam Fold and Matt Joyce. If you have to lose 2 to get 1, I would do that in this case, because I think David DeJesus gives you, I think he's the kind of player that the Rays need, because he does a couple of things. First of all, he's a tremendous defensive outfielder. He can lead off or bat second. He can, you know, he bat, you know, first or second in the order, which is something they've always kind of been looking for, is that kind of player, that kind of hitter. And he can steal a base for you a little bit. He's not going to steal 20 or 25, but he can steal 15 or maybe 20, you know, if you push it. And I think that's an element that they need. So I would keep David DeJesus at all costs, even if it means losing 2 other guys. I would just try to find a way to keep James Loney around. I think he's a tremendous first baseman. I mean, so the play he made last night, that double play with the base loaded in the second inning, was
the best play I've ever
seen a major league team make. I think he's exceptional defensively. I think he's found his stroke offensively. Maybe there's something about this lineup, this, you know, the American League that he likes better than the National League. It certainly worked out for him this year. I would push that. And I'd also push keeping Delmon Young. I think that's a right-handed bat. You know, I've always kind of wished for a number of years, and they could have done this rather cheaply. I would have liked to have seen him keep a guy like Johnny Gomes around over the last 2 years, because I think Johnny Gomes is a great guy in the clubhouse, number one, but he gives you a power bat from the right side. I think that's something that would help this team a little bit more. Just another power bat, somebody who's got that power element to him. And now that you've got Delmon Young, give him, you know, I would consider keeping him around too. So that's where I would start. And then you got to see what you're going to do with Price. If you can't hold on to him, if you're going to get rid of him, you got to push him to a team that's got, you know, going to give you 4 or 5 prospects back, and they've got to be Will. At least one's got to be a Will Myers type. It's got to be some kid who's going to be one of the best players in the game. You know, whether it's a Javier Baez with the Cubs or somebody like that. You've got to go get somebody, you know, early first round pick, somebody who people look at and say that guy's going to be a star in this league, because they need a Mike Trout type, a guy who can do everything And if you get those elements in there, it beats up that offense a little bit, you know, looking at it the way it is now. And I think that gives you, that allows you to push things over the top a little bit.
Yeah, but Roy, I got a question for you for David Price. What's Astro going to do when he leaves his beautiful home in Tampa here?
I don't know. I think somehow he'll adjust. We'd hate to see Astro go. I don't want that to happen. I don't know if he's going to. I like the Rays' chances of possibly keeping that player around. But you know what? They're smart. They're very smart.
Right.
They know what they've got in the system. They know what they've got, you know, ready to come up. And they know what they've got, you know, out there in other teams. And if they can make a deal that brings back a couple of pitching prospects that are close, you know, here's the thing, guys, and this is going to factor into it. You got a 9-9 year out of David Price this year, 9-9 out of David Price, and he missed a bunch of games. In other words, you got what you basically would get out of a third or fourth, fifth starter on an average team, and they still won 92 games. That will tell you right then and there they can win 90 games without David Price. It's easier to win with 90 games with David Price, but you can do it without him. And because you can find somebody that's going to, you know, the key is, can you find somebody to pitch as well as he does in some of those clutch moments? That game in Cleveland, for example, guys, there might not have been a better pitching effort this entire season by anybody. I mean, he just manned up that day and just said, I'm winning this game. That's the difference between David Price and a lot of other pitchers. But numbers-wise, you can see where they can make the suggestion and might believe that, hey, we can do this without him. We can, as long as we get, you know, they're getting Jeff Niemann back next year. If he's healthy, that will be, you know, that's somebody to push Jeremy Hellickson back, you know, into proper order, I hope. And what else, you know, Chris Archer's probably going to pitch in the rotation from the start on. We got to see what else is in the system and what else they can pick up. But they got some difficult decisions to make, but they're interesting decisions. As usual, to me, there's no more exciting offseason than the Baseball Hot Stove League.
Mm-hmm.
And now that the Rays are out of it, and, of course, my Cubs, I'm as anxious as anybody to see that started up.
One move I think you have to pay attention to, a possible move, is a Roy Halladay. Because I think a lot is going to depend on the offseason as to how he looks as he progresses, you know, from the end of the regular season into the offseason. They're going to be watching him because he's a free agent. He said he wants to come back to the Phillies, but he lives in Dunedin. And would that be, if they could get him on a incentive type of contract, that might be a great fit for the Rays.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I just would be concerned that he's going to, even at a proven contract, I would think Roy Halladay is going to still demand $7, $8, $9 million. I understand the incentives, but you know, can they afford the incentives? That's the thing. You know, again, I think the Rays would probably look at it and say, "Well, we plan to meet those incentives. So, how much is it going to cost? If it's, you know, if it's $10, $12 million, they're probably going to have to look somewhere." And again, you know, you're at a point with him. And again, it's just like sort of like what we got out of David Price this year. If you're at a point with Roy Halladay where what you're going to get is, you know, at best you're going to get 9, 10, 11 wins in a season where he hopes to come back and he's healthy all year, you could probably get that out of a, you know, out of a mid-range starter. You can, you know, you've got it. And that's how the Rays really look at it.
For a lot less money,
you know,
too.
We get the same
type
of thing. Yes,
yeah,
exactly. For a lot less money, which allows you to do some other things. And the other thing I think they have to do offensively, I really think they have to start going back to trying to be a run-producing type team that you know, manufactures runs. Small ball. I would love to see them become a base-stealing team.
Mm-hmm. Right. Going back to your comment before, I agree. I always like to buy on the downside if I'm a general manager. I like getting Price now when he was 9-9. I wouldn't want to get him when he was a Cy Young Award winner. I'd like to get him now. And the same thing with Loney. How much do you have to pay Loney? I don't know what he made this year. So what are you looking at? He had a good year. He's going to be up there and certainly higher than the mid-range. Can you get Loney to stake if they got that kind of money?
I think they can, and a lot's going to depend on James Loney. Does he want to stay? You know, I think he certainly came here this year to establish himself and prove that he's the player that everybody always
right.
thought he could be, and he did that. And now that he is, but see, here's the thing. Look at how and the Rays. I mean, here's one of the problems with the Rays. They stay on this merry-go-round. Corner positions have to be run-producing positions. You have to get 25. You probably should get 50 home runs out of those positions to be a contending team, out of first and second base. And it's the same as corner outfielders. You've got to get a certain amount of big top production out of those positions. You got to get 50 home runs out of first and second base. I think you've got to get 40 home runs at least out of left field and right field. Those are your power spots. And the Rays continue to be on this merry-go-round where they don't quite come up with, you know, those numbers because the first baseman's lacking a little bit. Now, Loney's not going to hit 25 homers, but if he's going to hit 300 and get on base at a 380 clip, well, that produces
runs. And he
can
hit 20. He can hit 20 homers, Roy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He can hit 20, and you got a 30 home run guy in Longoria. So, you know, there you have it. And to me, it's get off the merry-go-round, stick with a guy who you know is going to – and you know what? If you have to go cheap in left field. They're easy to find.
Right.
A lot of guys can play left field. If you get a speed guy there, it's going to cost you a little less, in fact, a lot less than it will if you're trying to get a 25 home run guy. So,
and you got
you know,
a center fielder that's got to play better next year than he did this year.
Yes, you should, absolutely. And if you've got DeJesus in the mix, you know, it's not a bad blend. So, and you do have the DH, so you can lose some of those power numbers at some of those corner spots. But to me, I would just like to see him get off the merry-go-round at first base because it's been a spot that's never really been filled. And at some point, you would like to see them have a Longoria type, somebody who, you know, they see as, okay, that's our first baseman of the future. He's the guy, no matter who it is, whether it's a kid from another organization, somebody they draft or someone that they develop on their own. But I would like to
yeah,
see
but
him get
Roy,
that
Roy, wouldn't you rather have Loney hit 20 home runs and be the kind of defensive player he is? He's going to save five games with his glove minimum.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's why I would want Loney back. And I would, if it means sacrificing – you know, dollars at other positions to keep him, I would do it.
Exactly. How about the catching position? That's going to be the biggest question mark, I think, in the offseason. Molina's going to come back at the age of 38. Is Jose Lobaton, quote-unquote, Mr. Softy, ready to take the full-time position? Then you got Chris Jimenez, who could be a backup next year. So that's going to be a lot of big question mark Andrew's got to make.
My guess is that they're probably going to find that answer through the system, like you said. You mentioned Chris Jimenez. Lobaton proved that he can certainly be a guy against right-handed hitters, and maybe you can find someone else. You know, the easy portion there is to find, you know, if you can find somebody that can hit lefties, that shouldn't be too hard. It's a little bit better. That's not a bad thing. So I think they can solve that. And here's the thing. You know, what are there, 3, 4, 5 catchers in the league that are you know, really good hitters? You know, you got Maurer, you've got Posey, you got a few, but for the most part, there are, you know, teams don't have catchers that hit for a great deal, and those that do usually do it for a year or two. If they could somehow get a guy that's going to be, you know, consistently hit, you know, 280 or 300 with 15 or 20 homers for 10 years, that'd be wonderful. But I don't think it's going to happen, and most teams don't have that. You worry, and I think the Rays, being the pitching defense type team they are, they need to find a catcher who can, you know, work with the pitchers primarily, number one, and then number two, be able to throw runners out. If they can do that and limit some steals, I think that'll help them as well.
Really, if you look at everybody thought Martin was finished with the Yankees last year. He barely hit 205, maybe 207, something like that. He comes in. He's not a big hitter for the Pirates, but he stabilized the whole pitching staff. I mean, he's been such an addition to that Pirate team. If you're a catcher, you don't have to hit. All you've got to do is be a catcher.
Exactly. Yeah, that's priority number one. It's just go out there and catch. Because, and one of the reasons most catchers, you know, they'll have a nice season and everybody thinks, oh, this guy's going to be, you know, the next Johnny Bench, you know, is because they get beat up. You know, I mean, my guy, all it takes is one foul tip off your knuckle and you can't hold the bat right. And then, you know, what would have been a line drive becomes a pop-up. And what would have been 280 becomes 260. So 260 is not bad for a catcher. So, you know. Yeah, you're right. It's got to be about pitching and defense first there. And that's what the Rays think, and that's why, Tommy, it's a very good point, who the catcher is going to be, but I still think they've got players within that I think they can, and again, it's cheap that way because these guys
right,
have options
right.
left and they can move people up and down. And
the other thing is, Roy, I think if Joe talked about it, he probably will the off season. In this series, the defense really let the Rays down. I mean, they did not play very well defensively. They really struggled in all four games.
Yeah, they did, and you know what? You saw that out of Ben Zobrist. And if part of the deal is that Ben Zobrist goes back and learns how to play left field, now here's another option, guys. Second basemen are cheaper than outfielders for the most part, depending on what their offensive production is. But if they can find a real, Category 5 second baseman, a Gold Glove type, a Darwin Barney type, like with the Cubs, someone who can absolutely solidify that infield, it's not a bad option. It's something to think about because, you know what, we saw a pretty good play out of Ben Zobrist in left field. He can go to left field and fill that hole too. And if you got Ben Zobrist playing left field, well, that's not a bad option in my opinion. So he is versatile. He can play anywhere. But if he's in left field and you suddenly got a Gold Glove at second base, it doesn't matter how much that guy hits. The defense alone is going to make a difference. And because, you know what, they lost some games this year because, for whatever reason, Ben Zobrist couldn't make a couple of plays on the pivot. And if you can't make those plays on the pivot, you're not just in the case, with Ben the last couple of days, it wasn't just that you lose a double play. You lose a double play plus runs score. Guys go to second base, if not third. And eventually they score. So it's a very important piece. And I think they're going to have to look at that and decide, all right, what's best for Ben Zobrist going forward? I'm not sure second base is his best spot going forward.
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, a perfect example of what you're talking about to fill that need at second would be Freddie Galvis from the Phillies.
I love that guy. Absolutely.
Tremendous fielder, second, third, short. They put him in left field. Not the greatest hitter, but, boy, I'll tell you, wherever you put him in the field, he's a Gold Glove type of player.
Well, to me, you're right. Freddie Galvis is the kind of guy I would look at, and I would look at a guy, who's got some steal ability. If it's a minor leaguer that's just coming up, somebody who's got the ability to steal 15 or 20 bases, if not 25 or 30, you put that element into this lineup, and all of a sudden it's a completely different lineup. Pitchers have to approach Longoria differently, Myers differently, whoever that third, fourth, fifth hitter is, differently because you got that speed element out there. That means more fastballs and that means more pitches that they can hit. And so I really think they've got to think and concentrate about getting that type of player in the lineup. And it doesn't matter whether it's at the top or the bottom, as long as they've got him in there somewhere, because if he's hitting eighth and all of a sudden, or ninth even, and it's the third inning and you're bringing those guys around and all of a sudden, is one out, but here comes Will Myers batting second. Well, it's not a bad thing. He's going to get a fastball, and that's a pitch he can drive because he proved this one thing late this year. He's a sucker for that slider down and away, and we've seen a lot of guys who fail on that pitch, and he needs to work on that one for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Myers was so over the last 6 weeks and into the playoffs, he really tailed off. He's got a lot of work to do through spring training and maybe even the wintertime. He's got a lot of work to do because they started to pitch to him very effectively, and could see the frustration in his face. The more he hit and did hit, the more frustration he had.
But you know what, guys? That just proved, in my opinion, what the Rays had been saying all along about Will Myers, is that, if we get into a position where we need him, we'll bring him up. And you know what? They got into a position where they need him, and they brought him up. But I think they always knew that he was probably another 6 months to a year away from really being ready. I think they brought him up ahead of time, not quite at a position where he was ready. They just needed him. They were desperate for someone to spark that offense, and he did it, And once people adjusted to him, he had difficulty adjusting back. I think he lost his confidence for sure. But I think that'll come back. A good spring training and some work in the batting cage with a coach or two, and, I think he'll be just fine. But he got a taste of it this year. He got a taste of success, and he got a taste of failure. And usually that's a good thing, get the balance, because if it's all success or all failure, it can really drive you in a different direction than where you want to be. So I think he's going to be just fine. He just needs to work on some things. And, I think just the season he had at the end, the way it finished for him, I think just justified what the Rays were saying at the beginning of the year. There's a reason he was going back to AAA at the start, and that was it. He wasn't quite ready.
What happened to Hellickson? What happened to him? I you know, he second half of the season, it just sort of walked away from him.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of things about confidence levels and arm slots, and I think it's a combination of mechanical issues and confidence breakdowns. He just didn't, you know, because here's the thing. He had a perfect, beautiful inning in the first inning last night. Two pop-ups and a lazy flyout. And then all of a sudden he can't find the plate. And you know, that to me, that's a mechanical thing. And once it becomes mechanical and you miss it the first time, when your confidence is as fragile as his appears to be right now, you can't bring it back. And, you know, Joe did the right thing by pulling him because there was no turning back now. Once that's done, you're not going to get him. You can't wait three innings to see if he can get it back. There was no pulling him back in. So, he probably needs a good winter off, come back fresh next year. And he needs to look at some film of what he did when he was really hot early in the year and almost carrying the team. And if he does that and gets the arm slot straight and release points back where they're supposed to be, I think he'll be just fine because the stuff is there. It's just not, you know, it doesn't have the snap that it had.
Another guy that they're going to have to really work and decide what they want to do is Rodney. I mean, he was a great, great reliever last year, and he still was a better than average reliever this year, but very suspect, and I would say that's another decision they have to make as to whether they want to stay with Rodney or not.
Yeah, I think you're right there, and I don't know what the contract is with him. If it's contractually, you know, if it makes sense contractually, I wouldn't mind bringing him back because closers are awfully hard to find. I mean, they're also sometimes, you know, you find one and you didn't think you had one. We've seen teams do that repeatedly. It would be nice if he could somehow come back. I don't know if they can do it with the contract. Again, you got to find some other pieces. You know, they've kind of been grooming Jake McGee to kind of fill that role. But
what
I haven't liked
12 straight fastballs last night, right?
So that one bothers me a little bit. So I'm not sure he's the answer there either. So we got to wait and see what they think there. But, yeah, that's one that they've got to look at. There's a lot of pieces here that they've got to examine over the next few months and decide, you know, are we going to stay with what we've got? Are we going to move on? Are we going to go get somebody? And if we're going to go get somebody, how are we going to obtain them?
Hey, Roy, I got a couple questions for you right now. I think right now you put Ben out and Ben Zobrist in left field. And what about Tim Beckham and Sean Rodriguez falling in at second base? That's another possibility. That's why Sean Rodriguez is here. He's brought up, Mike Socha was telling me, he's a 5-2 player. He's a great second baseman up there. And so does Tim Beckham in the second baseman, too. So there we go. That basically, those holes are basically filled if you go that way.
Well, you're right. And, again, you fill them within, which you have more control over the contracts that way. It's a good idea. I think it's something they're certainly going to consider, definitely with Beckham. I like Rodriguez, but I've always kind of seen Sean Rodriguez to me as I think he's a fourth outfielder, fifth infielder type. I just think he's – to me, I think he's like the next Ben Zobrist. And, you know, I don't know if he got 450 at bats, I'm not really sure what kind of offense you'd get out of him. I don't know if it could be really good or it could be really average. I don't disagree that he's a guy I'd like to see more of. But when you're a team like the Rays, you know, and your plan is to be in contention, you sometimes don't have a chance to test it out and say, all right, well, let's give this guy, you know, the next 35, 40 games in left field and see what he does. Let's give him 45 games at second base and see how he does it. Because you can't really afford to lose a game because he's not quite, you know, your best option there. But I do believe, you know, and here's the thing about Sean Rodriguez is he's not a complaining kind of guy. I think he realizes what his role is and what his talent level is. And I think for because of that, he's comfortable doing what he's doing. And so, therefore, he's a great guy to fill in and a great guy to plug in if you need him to over the long term or a longer stretch. So I think in the role he's in right now is probably the best role for him. But you're right, Tommy. I think the Rays will probably look at it and have that discussion and say, all right, is there a place for him on this team as a regular, as an everyday player? And if they decide that it is, my guess is that it would be second base, and they would see how that works out.
Roy, before you jump out, we spent a lot of time talking about Freeman over the last couple of weeks, and I know you were a big, big supporter of his. The comments by the Hall of Fame lineman and all the comments he made the last couple of days, and also the comments that Freeman has made himself. What do you think now?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm still not going to necessarily agree with what Fran Tarkenton said. It looks like 2020 hindsight, or that he was a prophet on the whole thing. I'm not going to buy that because I still think the kid has plenty of talent, and I'm still a supporter. For whatever reason, I think he got into a real bad situation. I think he might have gotten some bad advice, or he was making some bad decisions on his own. You know, I think he had a hand in engineering his departure from here. I think he tried to expedite the process. If that's the case, he certainly succeeded. But on the field, I still think that Josh Freeman was, and if he was still here today, would be the best quarterback on this team. I think he's the best quarterback on the Vikings right now. He may not always play like the best, but what I think he needs is somehow a coach who can get through to him and find out what it is that really makes him tick, whether he's an arm around the shoulder kind of guy or a kick in the butt kind of guy. Whatever it takes, I'd find out what that is, because the kid's got talent, and he's going to prove that very, very shortly, and I think he's going to be a fine quarterback again. I think he was doing pretty good with the Buccaneers. I still contend that he was not the biggest problem this team had, but they decided to make him the scapegoat, and I think he had a hand in it as well, but. They really got to the point where they couldn't do anything else to move him. But I still think he's got the talent to be a top-level player in this league.
I think he's in
the perfect location. And the reason I say that is the offensive coordinator is Bill Musgrave. Mm-hmm. And he was a great quarterback coach, bringing along Matt Ryan when he was here. And if you look at his background, his career – he has been a terrific developer of quarterbacks on every team that he ever was associated with. You know, and of course, he was a quarterback in the NFL, you know, not as a backup. But I always watched him for the Falcons. He went over to Minnesota last year. And I want to tell you, he was the one that was giving Mike Mularkey's plays. Mike was up in the booth, and he was the one that was giving the plays to Matt Ryan. And I think that Josh has the perfect mentor now, Bill Musgrave.
Well, I'd love to see him with a guy like that. I really do think that what will benefit Josh Freeman is a quarterback's coach and an offensive coordinator who are experienced, who are not like what the Bucs have had, both in Greg Olsen and Mike Sullivan as offensive coordinators, and even John McNulty as a quarterback's coach. I think he needs guys who are not trying to prove that they fit in the positions they're in, but guys who have been there, who have done it, who have done it successfully, and who have done it with several different kinds of quarterbacks, talented quarterbacks, not-so-talented quarterbacks, you know, big-arm guys, management-type guys. A guy who's done it. And like you said, Musgrave may be the kind of guy he needs. I think he needs someone who's confident in his in what he's doing, not trying to prove that he fits. And if he gets that, I think it would be the best thing for Josh Freeman. And because, again, the kid's got too much talent to fail. I really believe that. And for the most part, I believe his head's on straight, and that the work ethic is what you want it to be. The leadership skills are all there. I think all the intangibles are there as well, as the physical skills, and I think you just need someone to refine it.
What's your feeling about the Eagles game coming up this weekend?
Didn't hear any of that.
Go ahead, Roger.
I was just saying, and a coordinator who doesn't let his ego get in the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also, again, like I said, one who's confident in what he's doing, and. You know, someone who's not trying to just prove that, he can justify his position. I think if you get that, you know, you're going to get the best play out of Josh Freeman that you can have.
$3.99 or something.
Right.
Roy, how about the Eagles this week? This is a big weekend for Mr. Ciano and the Buccaneers. What do you think?
Now, listen, guys, we got Doug on here from Baltimore. He's going to be telling anybody that does anything else. So go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, it's definitely a big weekend for Coach Ciano, and I'll tell you, that offense is something else. If they can somehow figure out a way to get some oxygen tanks onto the field for those guys, they might just be able to get through this weekend. But it's going to be tough. I mean, this team's getting plays off 22 seconds at a clip, so it's they're quite the team. So it'll be fun to watch, and you know, I'd love to see some of the drama in Tampa here go away, and in order for that to happen, they got to win. But they got a tough order. That's an awful tough offense that they're dealing with. But you know what? The Bucs are the only team that's handled New Orleans so far this year. If they can handle the Eagles, maybe they'll put themselves in position to win.
Well, you'll be up here in Atlanta next week, Roy, and that'll be interesting with all the injuries that the Falcons have now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? The Bucs have played the Falcons really well the last few years.
They have.
And,
yeah.
Obviously beat them last year in Atlanta. So it's an interesting matchup. The season certainly has not gone the way either the Falcons or the Bucs had hoped. And so that'll be a game where probably both teams are looking to try to get things back on the right beam. But we'll see how it shakes out.
And don't forget Michael Vick's on the shelf too.
Well, maybe not. I mean, apparently he's been out there throwing the ball around. I don't know if that's a disguise or if it's the guy preparing to play on Sunday. Might be a little bit of both, so we'll see what happens.
Rory, I'll see you Sunday for brunch, and you'll see Roger next Sunday for brunch. So we see.
Indeed. Looking forward to both of those.
Yeah, but I think the food down there for your brunch is a lot better than at the Georgia Dome.
It's not bad at the Georgia Dome, but I have had better, that's for sure.
Well, I hope to see you at the hockey game tomorrow night. We play the Panthers, so hope to see you tomorrow night. And it's great to see you at the baseball games up there. And that's great. Always great to see you, Roy.
It was a lot of fun. Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank
you,
Roy.
See you Sunday.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Oh, gosh, yes. That was Roy Cummins of the Tampa Tribune. Does a great job of covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but.
Are you and Frank, are we going to make this Eagle game this weekend? Did you guys give a call in or no?
Oh, Frank.
We never got
a
response.
Frank.
We never got a response from the Bucks. I talked to sent emails to two different people up there, and they just blew us off.
Oh.
I would say probably not, Don.
Different plan for Sunday now.
Hey, Don, you know what the best thing that there might be to do? Get Henry involved.
Yeah, I will.
I'll
give Henry a call tonight after we finish the show. Well, it'll be too late. I'll call him in the morning.
Yeah, because this us telling that to Frank is go through Philadelphia. And Don, you're a legend up there. You go Frank on the pass up there, and that would be great up there. But,
well, Sharon's going to come up too.
Well, Frank and Tom and Don, I want to tell you one thing. You see the biggest difference when you're dealing with a more mature guy as the public relations or media relations director for teams, don't you?
Great.
I mean, I see Claude Felton at Georgia is one of the best I've ever seen. And, you know, when you look at that, and Derek Boyko is very good. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, you look back at Jim Gallagher, Charlie Taylor with the Falcons and the Redskins, Ed Croke with the Giants, right?
Oh,
now for all those years. Okay,
Gallagher and Croke were they were the best.
They were the best, absolutely. And you know, with these young kids today, they have attitudes. They think that because they're working in Major League Sports, that's it. And I'm sorry, you know, I think that. And they get away with treating people that they shouldn't treat them that way. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
So that's exactly. Roger, you got one of the best ones in the National Football League, and Mr. Reggie Roberts up there. I still wish we had him down here.
Well, and he's been around. I mean, he was with the league, he was with the Bucs, and he's with the Falcons, you know.
I just wish Reggie would be down here and that, but it's just – Because you go to the Bucks press box, it's telling us to Frank off the air, and there's no one in there. And then the person down, I'm not going to mention any names, and they say it's full.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, well, see, that's the old story. And Don and I have been, we've all been to press boxes where they say, oh, no, we don't have any room.
Right.
Oh, excuse me, I see at the Georgia Dome when you guys are there, they sell tickets to seats that are behind the three levels of the press tables.
Wow. So
there's actually fans that have tickets that sit back there.
Jeez, they're probably getting probably sodas and the press notes for you.
Oh, they are. They get everything. You know, it's just not what we're used to. I mean, you know, not at the
right.
Vet, not at the Link, at Citizens Bank Park, Connie Mack Stadium,
right.
You know, wherever. So, you know, it's ridiculous.
Well, I happen to know a guy from Merlin that probably has tickets in the super box because he's the pro to all those people up there.
Yes,
like
the one
with
Doug or Golf Pro.
Yes, it.
Oh, Doug, good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello, Doug.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Had some noise in the background there. But, yeah, I'm here.
It's in the background, right, Doug?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Leo's chasing the cat.
Yeah. I think he's tired.
Oh, no.
He's taking a nap, man.
I think our producer had two lines open at the same time. Two conversations going simultaneously, which is pretty good for
him. He's the executive producer, let me tell you. None of us are on.
I'd like you to know that we currently have 37 lines that we're working. We froze up the board tonight. I had a call. I was talking to Mike and had it to rescheduling for next week because we froze up their lines. They asked us to shut down.
Wow. Isn't it really? 37
yeah.
lines died out.
37
oh
lines.
God.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
So,
we need everyone we can get.
Yeah, that's right. Quite a few people out there listening. So.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, but I could tell you, I've always listened to a funny story here, Frank, Don, and Roger. It's this way, you know, you're going to East Dakota, the Orlando Magic in Orlando, right? And everybody's so excited about the media meal. You know the media meal you go eat. The NBA would be the complimentary meal you go eat there and that. And I used to get a kick. I just talked to different basketball people and that. So making a drive from Tampa, I get the flagship on the Orlando Magic end. And the joke was, tonight's media meal is, should I pull in the McDonald's? Should I pull in the Burger King and go straight on there, right? So there it is. I said to one of the Magic radio announcers, why don't you have a contest for the media meal and have dinner with you? So honest to God, Don, Roger, and Frank, they didn't have a contest. Guess how many people to send an entry in? 10,000 people would have a media meal at the old Orlando Arena.
Well, Don, we need to get our golf pro on here and have him give us our thing so we can get started to win and take his money on the pool.
That's right, Frank.
Great.
Hey, And when you get to me, it's going to be a tough one because I know the Ravens are playing at home, but they're playing against the Packers, and that is a pretty formidable opponent there.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a tough one. So I need some time to think about that one.
Doug, I got to tell you, my swing, I changed my swing around. I played yesterday with one of the top broadcasters in hockey. Invited him on the show, Rick Peckham. We played East Lake Woodlands, one of the tough golf courses in Tampa Bay. So I actually... I used to crouch down. I stand straight up, arch like that. I'm hitting the ball close to 300 yards that way.
Well, you know, posture is very important, and to be able to generate, some good consistent swing speed. Certainly, we need to have a solid base. We need to be standing, far enough from the ball that we can make applicable shoulder turns and generate a lot of that club head speed. So posture is very important. So that's good to hear.
And it's the same thing in putting, too. And in the
yeah.
I used to slouch down the putting, straight ahead this way, and that's the chip shots down. What's your tip of the week for the Northern golfers and the Southern
golfers?
Absolutely.
I mean, the fundamentals of the game in terms of whatever you're doing, whether it's, shooting a basketball or, as you guys talk about, hockey and the different things that you need to do, those are extremely important. So tip of the week, it's kind of more of a public service announcement, but we're – as finishing up a lot of the season here in the Northeast, and You know, we talked, I think, last week a little bit about, you know, taking a little bit of an inventory about your game and some of the things that you can probably improve on moving into the offseason. But more of the superintendent side, I suppose, we were recently vandalized at our golf course. Someone drove onto it and unfortunately had some fun on some of the fairways and the greens. So, you know, the public service announcement is that, you know, our superintendents work awfully hard to create, you know, wonderful playing, you know, conditions for us on a daily basis. And I don't know that the average golfer kind of appreciates, you know, a lot of those certain things when they go, and they feel, I guess, maybe somewhat entitled as they pay their greens fees or their membership dues, that that's expected. And so when you go play golf courses, understand the rules, pace of play, you know, the cart rules, but be vigilant about, you know, replacing your divots or using the sand mix that's on your golf cart, you know, properly to fill those in. Raking bunkers, the footprints and different things, picking up your feet, you know, obviously on the green so that you don't create, you know, bad situations with the turf there, where you lay the flag stick, you know, all those important things that, that, you know, the next guy that comes through there can enjoy the same playing conditions that you had, and that it makes it easier for the superintendent to go back through and maintain that golf course. So, you know, that's why they do their aerifications, you know, to punch holes to create healthy turf situations. That's why they rotate pins to keep people in and out of certain areas from a foot traffic standpoint. And they work awfully hard to provide us with those conditions. So respect that and do your part, you know, as a golfer.
Doug, yeah, I think one of the things you'd be interested in this week, we had the young fella down. We had a couple of tournaments here at the Sarah Bay in Sarasota.
Uh-huh.
The first one was last weekend, and the young fellow from just outside of Orlando that played with Mickelson and played the Open with Mickelson and Tiger,
uh-huh.
he was here, shot 68.
Wow.
But another young fellow, 14 years old, first day out, shot 64.
Oh, no. 14 years old.
14 years old, he shot 64.
Absolutely incredible. The talent levels of some of these youngsters that, you know, really work hard on their games and kind of dedicate themselves to getting better. And, you know, they're just so ridiculously good. And it's fun to watch those youngsters, you know. Wait till they get a job. Wait till they get married. They'll get worse.
Wow. 14 years old at 64?
Yeah.
64 he played,
yeah. Yeah, but Tommy, he plays for St. Stephen's. And that's they do a very modified high school. They do 4 hours in school, and the rest of the time of the day is spent on the golf course.
Yeah, that was
the Donald Ross tournament just for.
Oh yeah, and Frank, he's not even the number one player on their team.
Right.
64. Yeah. I mean,
Frank, is that like the golf academy and the soccer academy that they have in Florida? You know,
no,
high school kids.
No, that's IMG. That's different.
IMG.
Oh, that's IMG. Okay.
Right. No, this is a high school 64. That. It now is at $26,000 a year to go to. So you better have.
I mean, they had a good baseball program, didn't they? Then they Frank St. Stephen's. That's right by Cortez Road. Or
they play. It's right on Cortez.
Yes.
They play. They play all the international teams, and they have kids from all over the world that actually come there to go to school.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've got two. Manatee can play football anywhere in the world, and these guys can play golf anywhere in the world.
Jeez, almighty.
As a matter of fact, Don, I'm glad you brought that up, because Joe Canaan, the coach at Manatee, was just nominated for the number one coach in the United States by Sports Illustrated.
Whoa.
Wow.
Great.
That's a great. Wow, that's fantastic up there. But Doug, what you said about the condition of the golf course, I applaud you tremendously. Every time I'm playing, you know, I always get the divots, you know, you rake the traps, you know. And you know, I see these guys in these carts, they put the cart by the green, they just don't rake the traps, anything else that way. And I remember, this is old-time golf. Roger and Frank remember this. Remember those Springfield Country Club? They always had the two cups in there, so they had to put the pin in one cup, and put the other cup up
right,
there. I remember that, God, because I couldn't believe how these people would do it. Then you go to the private clubs, and you had the long stick.
Well,
on
the rotating of the cups in that sense is typically an off-season condition where, We do that up here. The superintendent, he'll cut at least two, or sometimes maybe three cups on certain holes where during the winter time, unfortunately, you know, you'll get the freezing of the turf and you can't cut a cup. So in that sense, he would be kind of penalized by not being able to rotate and keep people from a foot traffic standpoint away from that area, and you would get excessive wear patterns, you know, near the hole from people obviously walking up there to pick their ball out and make their putts. So he would put two or three different cups in the green during the wintertime so he wouldn't have to worry about changing them, and then it's your job to just rotate as you move through there. So, but imagine, you know, obviously I know you guys, we want to get on to the football picks, but the green fee that you're paying are going to escalate if they have to continually repair damage
to
people that don't take care of it.
Definitely.
And furthermore,
you
know, if you're in front of me and you're playing golf and you, you know, rip one down the fairway and then you take a divot and don't either replace it and or fill it in with some sort of a mix, now I'm penalized and I didn't do anything wrong. You know,
right.
You know, not only leaving the course in a better condition, but making it fair for the guy playing behind you is important as well.
Well, Tommy, that's last question for you. Do you still play with the flag on the cart?
You know, I'll answer it this way. I'll walk and carry my own bag. How about that?
I always know that. I always see Tommy, and I always see that flag on the back of his car. I didn't know exactly what that was.
I need a doctor's note for that one.
That's really out there, guys, with the flag and a case of beer in the cooler.
Who won our picks last week there, my man?
I believe Roger won the picks last week, yes.
Oh, boy.
I don't have my sheet in front of me this week. I had a tie up at the office time. We had a problem.
Oh, no wonder you thought Roger won.
Sure. I think he wrote his picks.
Cardinals just went up 2-0 over the Pirates on a home run.
Ooh, home run just a second ago.
Yep.
But you know,
how about that freeze?
Tommy,
that freeze is unbelievable in the playoffs,
isn't
he?
He is unbelievable. He's Mr. October for this era, I'll tell you that.
Guy is unbelievable.
Tommy, you know, real quick, I was just going to say when you were talking about Springfield, first time I ever played golf was at the old PE Country Club.
Sure.
You know, at Arlington Road in Township Line.
Right.
And a friend of mine worked for PE. And I can remember I played golf. We never put the flag down, you know, on the ground. You know, we either held it or put it in the hole.
Exactly,
and then the next time, years later, when I went, wait a minute, I never saw anybody just throw the flag on the ground. We were stopped it.
Yep. Hey, but, Doug, I got a tip for you to tell your members this. My dad told me when I was playing golf, always lay your club by the stick, okay? You lay your stick down, always lay your club by there. Because why? You got to pick up the stick, put it in the hole, and your club is right there in that. So my dad told me that when I was first playing, and thank God I've not lost a golf club by doing that at all. And he told me what to do about that. But my pet peeve is you go in a bunker, and it's not raked, and you go in a green, all these divots along the green. That is my pet peeve. One course I played down here, I would spend 20 minutes repairing all the ball marks. And that's just in there. And you try to tell these guys, stay in the cart path. This course I play, step by golf club down here, Doug, we have to get you on down here and play. I'm on the cart path the whole time up there during the summertime. I walk up there, and you have these guys or members, they go up right by the sand trap and park the cart there.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're supposed to be the white mark up there and tell these guys that's all you can go by right there. You can't go by there.
I'll tell you another thing you could do. We actually provide it, obviously, from a country code standpoint for our members, but we print them out little sticky name labels that we affix to their golf clubs with their name and the phone number of our country club, so that if they do lose their club, at least somebody with a conscience can turn it in. And anybody out there can invest in those. It's, you know, I don't know, $5-$10 maybe for a set. You know what I mean? It's not that big a deal, but it may save you the hassle of buying a new club if somebody were willing to turn that in and know that. But I tell
you
know, to your point, we were talking about, you know, tips and stuff like that. I can tell you when I was growing up, my dad always told me, he said, carry your golf bag when you walk on your left shoulder. And I looked at him and I said, why? And he said, so you can drink beer with your right hand.
I tell you a funny story. When buddy of mine was caddying up there and that, right? We had, remember this, we had Roger and Frank and Don, they had rowing green day. So, you know, by the time you went out of school and you caddied up there, right? So it was a sloppy day there, and it rained the night before. and the guys are teeing off in the high tee box, and it goes downhill with its dog leg to the left, right? So the guy, this is a member guest, biggest event, member guest, guy hit his ball so bad, right? It was in the mud. He says, "Caddy, where's my ball?" And his response was, if you give me a shovel, I'll dig it out."
You better get to the picks, Tommy, or the show's going to be over.
I don't have the paper with me this week, Don. Darn it. Can we get the picks next week? I'll be more prepared that way. Get the picks next week in that.
Tommy, you are the reason why they had that song, right?
But
Oh, Promise Me.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
How about if I read them off real quickly to you, Tommy? How about
that?
There
we go. We got to get these picks in. Roll them.
Okay, Thursday night, Giants and Bears.
Oh, God.
Bears.
I want the Bears.
All right.
Yeah.
Bears. I'm going to take the Bears, too.
Yeah. Definitely.
Chicago. Yeah, got to be Chicago.
Okay, Giants and Bears. Okay.
Philadelphia, Tampa Bay.
Well, that's a no-brainer right there.
Fly.
On the road to victory.
I'm going to take the Eagles, too.
I'm taking the Eagles. That'll bring them to 3-3.
Is Nick Foles the quarterback?
Yeah, Nick Foles is quarterback, yes.
Oh, Jesus. Somebody's got to win that game. I'm going to pick Tampa Bay. I think this is the week that Tampa Bay gets themselves together. I like Doug Martin to have a big day, and I think Tampa Bay pulls one out.
Oh, wow, okay.
Pittsburgh and the Jets. I'll take the Jets.
Pittsburgh.
I'll take
Pittsburgh.
Jets, too. They're on a roll.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Jets.
I am going to throw open my mouth for making this pick, but I'm going to pick Pittsburgh.
Ooh. Got to get a win, right, Brian?
Yeah.
All right,
Oakland, Kansas City. I'll go with Kansas City.
All right, who's going to go with Kansas City?
Kansas City.
I can't see how you can go against them.
Right.
All right.
Everybody in?
Okay. Yep.
Cincinnati, Buffalo at Buffalo.
I'm going to go with the Bengals, Don.
I'm going to go with you. I think the Bengals are starting to make a ride. I'm going to go with the Bengals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Okay, Cincinnati, Frank, okay.
Yeah.
Here's a good one for you. St. Louis at Houston.
Houston.
I'm going to go Houston also. I'm Houston.
Houston.
Yeah,
you guys are Houston? Okay.
I'm going to take the Little Sisters of the Poor.
I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick St. Louis because I think Houston is just in a tailspin. They're not going to figure it out.
You're right.
I'm going to go with St. Louis too for some reason. I don't know. It's just a dumb reason. I'm going to go with Houston. I mean, with St. Louis. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm going with
Tommy. Detroit, your favorite clubs, Cleveland.
Oh. Da 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 da. Da, 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 da. Cleveland, of course. They're 3-2, Don. I'm impressed.
I'm going to go to Detroit.
Oh, you're going to Detroit. Okay.
I'm going to go with Cleveland, Tommy.
You go to Cleveland, Raj? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll take Detroit.
I'm going to take the Lions as well.
Oh, the Lions? Okay. Frank?
Detroit. Yep.
Jeez, everybody's going for Detroit. I'm telling you.
Doug's
not too
Doug's
good.
Game. Green Bay at Baltimore.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy, Green Bay, Baltimore. I know what Frank wants, and I know what Doug wants. I'm writing that down already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Green Bay, I guess.
I'm going to go Baltimore.
Oh,
all right.
Baltimore.
I'm
going
to go Baltimore also.
Jeez, I'm on out here at a limb up here. I know. I got to get the CFL picks in, too. Okay, who's the next pick?
Yeah. Baltimore. I got to do it.
Okay, Baltimore. Okay, I got you, Baltimore. Okay, what's the next game?
This is a toss-in. The biggest line in the history of the National Football League. Denver by 28 over Jacksonville.
You ready for this, guys?
28-point favorite.
Right? You ready for this? I'm picking Jacksonville.
We don't give points.
Yeah, right.
I'm taking Denver.
I'm taking Denver, too.
I'm going to take Denver, and I'm going to say this. I'm in a fancy football league, and I'm really glad I'm not playing against somebody that has any Denver Broncos this week because they're going to go crazy.
Hey guys, okay, can we add one more guy onto our list here? Mike Schulte just joined us.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hi.
Mike, how are you doing tonight? So we're getting slammed up here, Mike. You want to just do our football picks right now?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good.
How are you, Mike?
Good.
Mike, just tell us about the events you had. We had a great bowling event last week. Tell us about the events coming up for the Outback Bowl and how we get tickets for the Outback Bowl.
Well, yeah, tickets are on sale. Yeah, first of all, you know, we're loving the college football season so far. Had a great first half of the season so far, and a lot of great games, to come. And it's going to be real interesting to see how things are going to unfold here the rest of the way. So, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC, of course, are the teams that we get in our Outback Bowl every year. So we're looking at those conferences, and there's it seems like there's going to be a lot of really good programs that we may have a chance at having in our game this year. So we're very excited right now about the matchup we might have. Tickets are on sale through Ticketmaster, Ticketmaster.com. It's probably the easiest way to get them. And we've got a whole week of events leading up to the game, and a lot of good things happening. So we're very, very excited.
Well, Ohio State may only have one stumbling block, and that may be Michigan in the last game of the season. I don't see them losing anybody before they get to – I don't see them losing to Michigan either, but I think that's the only tough game they have.
Yeah, it seems like I think they'll certainly be probably pretty heavy favorites the rest of their schedule until at least the Michigan game. You got to show up every week. I mean, that's one thing about college football, especially if you have your sights set on trying to get to the national championship. As we say, every game counts. You really have to make sure that you don't, overlook anybody along the way because there's a lot. All of their teams are going to be out to beating them. It's going to be a huge, huge win for them, no matter what their record is.
Right.
They've got to be prepared every week in and week out. And we have a saying in our office that every week in college football, every week something happens you don't expect. And basically that translates to every week there's going to be an upset that you didn't see coming. And the team, you obviously don't want to be the one that's on the bad side of that.
And Alabama's got the same situation. They don't want to. They want to have a three-peat. They don't want to lose, but the same, they've got to play every week.
Mike, there was almost a big upset Saturday in that Georgia-Kentucky game.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean Georgia-Tennessee and then the South Carolina-Kentucky, both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can't take a week off in major college football, or you're going to pay for it. You look at Alabama last year, and not to say they took a week off against Texas A&M a year ago. But nobody had Texas A&M, going to beat Alabama. And, of course, it turned out to be the only game they lost. But this year they were better prepared for them, and they still gave them a heck of a battle, So even though they knew coming in that it was a game that they had set their sights on the whole year, that they knew, what to expect. And Texas A&M, gave them a heck of a fight. So, everybody out there has 85 scholarships. They all got, high paid coaches. They all got, the same kind of things they're trying to do. Some of them are a little bit more deep than others. Some maybe have a better quarterback or whatever. But, at the end of the day, you got to go out ready to play every single game. So, you can't just sit there and say, well, we got six more games left. We only got a couple that are going to be tough. They're all tough. It's just that some might be a little, tougher than others. But if you take it off, you're going to be in trouble.
Those boys out in Oregon, they're still playing too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's lots of games, lots of huge games, especially now that the teams are, deep into their conference schedules now, where they're actually playing teams and within their conference. The other thing too, when you're playing teams in your own conference, and this is probably any sport, but teams in your own conference, you tend to play them, most every year, if not every year, depending on the team. And, they're used to, your schemes, they're used to the coaches, you know, they know your athletes, you know, better than non-conference games are. So, you know, when you get into conference play, a lot of times, you know, it's a situation where, you know, you got to be, you know, you're going to be better prepared for the team you're playing because you know what they like to do, what the coach likes to do, or what the players can do because you played in last year and that, so, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's the thing, you know, so often in conference play, there's upsets each year because, you know, teams know how to scheme against you know, other programs because they've played them so much. So that gives a whole another dimension to it than you might find if you're, you know, playing a team that's not one that you ever typically play and they're not maybe used to playing your style of football.
Hey, gentlemen, Frank just told me Mickey's up against the clock. Mike, we'll get you on next week at the normal time at 8:15. Thank you so much for coming on, Mike, and great to see
appreciate
you last
it,
week, Mike.
Appreciate it, guys. Good luck
with
your
next
year. And,
okay.
Look forward to talking with next week. Take care.
Yes,
thanks,
take
Mike.
Care.
We got four more games, Frank.
We're up against the clock.
We can't do the last four games?
Yeah,
they
have a program right behind us, and they really kick us off.
Okay.
Have a great week, guys. God bless.
Roger, thanks for coming on.
Have a good week.
Send information to you tomorrow. Don, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Doug, thanks for coming on also. As Frank says, we got to wrap this thing up real quick, so I'll be a 30-second. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Bradford White Water Heaters, Amherst, Pennsylvania. Log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Lightning home against the Florida Panthers tomorrow night, 813-301-6600. And also Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Give Tim a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Corsini Leos University, right then, give them a call, 352-588-2600. To thank Lauren Samuels, fan of the Tampa Bay Storm, Roy Cummings, the Tampa Tribune, Mike Schultze, of the Outback Bowl. Now, Frank, take it away. God bless, and I'll see you real soon.
Okay, thanks, Tommy. And ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, please just walk over and just say thank you, say hi, whatever you want. It makes the guys really feel like they're doing their job and they're thankful. They're thankful that you like what they're doing. Remember, they are the guys that run in there when everybody else is running away. These programs are also dedicated to fallen officers, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Detective David Curtis, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Patrolman David Crawford, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Uniform Division, Patrolman Ryan Murphy, Plymouth Township PD, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Murphy, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. I can't do anything.